is expressing the moral outrage that I feel, and I make no apologies for it.
Biden stands by his words. It's Wednesday, March 30th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Chris Cascale in Washington. Find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, Ukrainian doctors' war stories, Pacific Island COVID outbreaks, skyrocketing Thai food costs, banking on TEF, reducing food waste. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Russia's military says it will fundamentally cut back operations near Ukraine's capital and a northern city, as talks brought a possible deal to end a grinding war into view. Meanwhile, U.S. President Joe Biden's whirlwind diplomatic tour of Europe might be most remembered by his words about Russian President Vladimir Putin. This man cannot remain in power. 2 days after his utterance, Biden clarified that although he won't back down from this sentiment, the U.S. did not plan to take Putin out of office. VOA's Anita Powell reports from the White House on what this means as this Ukraine conflict enters a second month.
After 3 days of lengthy meetings and delicate negotiations, firm agreements and fervent promises, it all came down to 9 words about Russian President Vladimir Putin.
For God's sake, this man cannot remain in power.
Back in Washington on Monday, Biden defiantly defended his words, but clarified his intent.
I'm not walking anything back. The fact of the matter is, I was expressing the moral outrage I felt toward the way Putin is dealing and the actions of this man. Just brutality. Half the children in Ukraine. I had just come from being with those families. But I want to make it clear. I wasn't then, nor am I now, articulating a policy change. I was expressing the moral outrage that I feel, and I make no apologies for it.
But analysts say this is dangerous talk for American diplomacy. Andrew Lowson of the Center for Strategic and International Studies via Zoom.
This is confirming some of the worst suspicions of what the United States really wants in global affairs. I think in terms of the reactions from other countries around the world, the comment was unwelcome. We certainly saw a reaction from other European partners clarifying that the United States should not and cannot be using this kind of escalatory language. And so I think, unfortunately, the comment is one that is going to reverberate still for a number of days and weeks.
Biden, who said he was moved by Ukrainian refugees he met in Poland, stressed that he was not threatening Putin with regime change.
It was expressing my outrage. He shouldn't remain in power. Just like, you know, bad people shouldn't continue to do bad things. But it doesn't mean we have a fundamental policy to do anything to take Putin down in any way.
American Enterprise Institute analyst Leon Aaron, a keen follower of the Kremlin, says Putin is likely to shrug off such talk for now.
Putin is a big boy. Remember, he had been called a murderer, and then they smiled at each other and shook hands. I believe that he, in the long run, I don't think it's going to hamper anything. Now, to say that he'll forget it, no, of course he won't. He will not forget it, and he will definitely try to get back at Biden in one way or another, whether rhetorically or in some sort of policy action. But for now, it's not a disaster.
Aaron says Putin is unlikely to change course in this brutal conflict, now entering its second month. On Monday, Russian state television aired what it said was the inside of a theater destroyed by Russian bombing on March 16th in the southern city of Mariupol. Civilians sheltering there said they had tied a white flag to the top of the building and painted the word children in large white letters on the ground, visible from the air. Ukrainian officials estimate that about 300 people were killed in that strike. Anita Powell, VOA News, the White House.
Read more on our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the VOAnews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on VOAnews.com. Biden to host Singapore's Prime Minister at White House. North Korea didn't test monster missile after all, South Korea says. Singapore rejects last appeal of Malaysian man facing death penalty over drug charges. Australia and New Zealand worried by China deal with Solomons. Pakistan's parliament takes up no trust motion against PM Khan. Find complete coverage on all these stories on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the VOAnews.com website. Thank you for joining us on VOA Asia on this Wednesday. Since the start of Russia's invasion of Ukraine, at least 128 children have died and 172 others have been wounded in the country, according to Ukraine's Office of the Prosecutor General. The United Nations reports that more than 1,000 civilians have died so far. Despite the constant danger, Ukrainian doctors are fighting to prevent more deaths. For VOA, Maria Proust talked with some about working in wartime.
Despite heavy shelling and with guns in their hands, Ukrainian doctors are saving lives. Doctors say the main children's hospital in Ukraine, Okhmadid, has been shelled a number of times.
Between 5 and 6 o'clock, we heard explosions, about 3 explosions not far from the hospital, so all staff and patients could hear them. Windows shattered, and so did the doors. Our neurology office was destroyed. Right now we can't work there because the ceiling collapsed. But we keep helping people, we keep consulting, we still admit people to hospital, just in other buildings, in other parts of the hospital.
Doctors are pressing on in Mariupol, Sumy, Chernihiv, Kharkiv, and many other cities.
We're holding tight and try to do our job as best we can. When we are in ORs operating and we hear explosions, we try to keep calm and pray. We are working fast and without panic, trying not to think of what's happening outside the operating room. It's amazing to feel the unity and connection we all share.
Since the start of Russia's invasion, the World Health Organization has counted at least 64 attacks on medical institutions in Ukraine. In Mariupol, Russian forces captured an intensive care hospital and took hostages, according to the Media Initiative for Human Rights.
Every single person who works at the hospital knows what they are doing because the shelling has taken place in many cities already, massive shelling. And everyone knows what working at a hospital entails. They know it can easily become a target.
Most medical professionals work grueling hours for days on end. Others live in hospitals.
When the war started, on the first day, I couldn't get to my workplace. And when I did manage to leave the house, it took me 3 hours to get there. So I decided to just leave at the hospital. We have a shelter here and people who can always help.
Thanks to volunteers and private organizations, members of the hospital staff, at least for now, are getting what they need.
Supplies of food and medications into hospitals have been working very well. Both companies and volunteers are making food for hospitals or delivering groceries so that we can make food here.
Much of the humanitarian aid is coming to hospitals from abroad, including from the US and Europe.
These are not just syringes and gloves. There are lots of medications, including, for example, a wound vac. My clinic just sent some to Ukraine. It helps wounds close up faster. I think if it goes on for a few more months, and it seems likely that it will, Ukraine will have a lot of modern medical assistance in all hospitals around the country.
Like many Ukrainians, doctors are closer and resolute.
To be honest, I never thought my colleagues and I could unite like this. We are like a large family, but when you are working side by side for days in a row, you realize these are your people, they will help. We will definitely win. We are waiting for victory every day, and we will do everything in our power to bring the victory closer.
Meanwhile, the World Health Organization warns that Ukraine's health facilities are stretched beyond capacity. as new patients keep coming and humanitarian needs grow. Maria Proust, VOA News, Washington.
Still to come on VOA Asia, some of the last places on Earth to be infected with COVID-19. Happening now in Asia, Shanghai has launched a new central quarantine site to house 6,000 people who have tested positive for coronavirus and are experiencing mild or asymptomatic infections. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. More cases of COVID-19 are being reported in the Pacific as outbreaks worsen in some of the last places on Earth to be infected with the virus. Samoa is extending a nationwide lockdown until April 5th, while a state of public emergency remains in place for Solomon Islands. Phil Mercer reports for VOA.
Since the start of the year, the Pacific Island nations of Kiribati, Tonga, the Solomon Islands, the Cook Islands, and American Samoa have all had their first major waves of COVID-19. Academics blame the spread of the Omicron variant and the reopening of international borders. Daily case numbers are rising in Samoa, an island nation of about 200,000 people, 5,700 kilometres east of Australia. Its main hospital in the capital, Apia, is under increasing pressure as more frontline workers contract the virus. Samoa has reported almost 1,300 coronavirus cases since the pandemic began, according to government data. No deaths have been recorded. Dr. Colin Tukui Tonga, an associate dean at the University of Auckland, says island nations have had time since the start of the pandemic to prepare for outbreaks.
The advantage, of course, of the two-year delay is they're able to test their systems, vaccinate their populations, inform their population. So there's no doubt there's some advantage of being affected down the line as opposed to being one of the early ones. And this has been an advantage for the small islands. Isolation, which is normally a curse with people trying to get their goods to markets and so on, was a protective factor. But with travel being loosened and border measures lifted, it was always going to happen.
Fiji has recorded 64,000 infections and 800 deaths since the pandemic began, the highest among the region's island nations, according to the World Health Organization. Experts have concerns about the ability of health systems in other parts of Melanesia, including Papua New Guinea and the Solomon Islands, to cope with rising case numbers. The World Health Organization has documented more than 43,000 infections in Papua New Guinea and 640 fatalities. In the Solomon Islands, the WHO has recorded 10,778 COVID-19 cases. 113 people have died. However, some island nations in the Pacific remain COVID-free, including Nauru, Tokelau and Tuvalu. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook. VOA Asia is also on Twitter and YouTube. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, read, and share all the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news, information, and great features.
This news alert from VOA Asia. Hundreds of workers in India marched with red flags of the labor unions and chanted anti-government slogans in New Delhi on Tuesday during the second day of a nationwide strike. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Welcome back to VOA Asia. Rising costs are impacting day-to-day living for many Americans. In the Thai community in Los Angeles, many are having to make some hard choices. Noprat Chaichalaromongkol has a story reported for VOA by Supakit Patarantaranan.
When Thai food lovers in the Los Angeles areas think of a meal for less than $10, the Wat Thai of Los Angeles food court or Thai temple food court comes to mind. But inflation and supply chain issues have sent food prices skyrocketing, and that's putting vendors in a tough spot.
Oh my goodness, the prices rose a lot. I don't know what I can add to. Adding too little may upset the customers. Everything from tomatoes to Thai chilies, dried shrimp, peanuts, garlic, it's more expensive. The prices of MSG and papaya are doubling or more.
$17, please.
Family member and co-owner Kirati Jaruthanmakorn, who makes sure the business stays afloat, says for now prices are staying the same, mainly to keep them coming back.
Right now, we don't raise the prices of any items that we offer at our shop. The price of every dish has been the same for the last 5 to 7 years because we want to retain as many customers as possible. Some shops have already started raising their prices because they could not cope with the rising costs.
Fish sauce imported mainly from Thailand and Vietnam is arguably the heart and soul of authentic Southeast Asian cooking, indispensable for dishes with worldwide popularity like somtam or papaya salad.
No need to talk about fish sauce. It's very expensive now and in shortage. It went up from $2 to $5 now.
Consumers are accustomed to paying more at restaurants, including ethnic food eateries, that often are more affordable than Western fine dining. But they do notice big price changes.
Most of them will gradually raise prices, like a $2 increase each time. No one will complain if the portion and the quality of the food is the same. But some shops just reduce the portion while keeping the prices unchanged. In that case, we feel like it's not right.
As the war in Ukraine rages on, fueling market jitters that could drive costs even higher. And restaurant owners are worried higher prices could leave a bad taste in the mouth of their patrons. For Supakit Patarantaranan, Noprat Chaichalaromongkol for VOA News.
Making headlines in Asia, Malaysia's health ministry is proposing a major initiative to prevent young people from smoking. It's a bold plan, but critics say it has flaws. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. Teff, an ancient grain from the Horn of Africa, has found new enthusiasts in the United States. It's being cultivated in the American West and Midwest, where growers note its appeal as a gluten-free superfood. VOA's Tewelde Tesfagabir reports from Nevada, narrated by Vincent McCorry.
Nevada is known for being the home of Las Vegas, the center of America's gambling industry. But some farmers here are hoping to strike it rich by growing an ancient African grain. More farmers are moving to capitalize on growing demand for gluten-free foods by planting teff, a cereal grass native to the Horn of Africa.
I start doing this almost 40 years now.
Tesfa Dirar grew up helping his parents raise teff in what is now Eritrea. When he came to the United States for university, he missed the staple spongy injera bread that is made from teff.
I brought about 20 pounds or 10 kilo of teff seed from Eritrea, and then I planted it in Minnesota, University of Minnesota, where I was studying. That time I gave it to different colleges to make a research.
Now, his Salem Foods markets the iron-rich grain online with recipes for injera and a history of teff, one of the oldest domesticated plants. Down the road at Desert Oasis Stephen Green, John Gitto and his son Miles say they're selling teff by truckloads to wholesale customers in California and in one-pound bags to local consumers.
Nevada, Idaho, Arizona, Southern California, those are all places where teff's grown at. Just because I think it mimics the natural climate of Ethiopia, you know, high altitude, high temperature, which teff likes.
At the University of Nevada, Reno, researchers are studying this drought-tolerant grain as a way to help adapt to climate change.
As the western United States is getting drier and drier due to global climate change, we felt that it important to make an investment in some alternative crops.
Bob Dexter used to grow wheat, barley, and alfalfa for horse feed, but has added teff to the land he farms along the Carson River.
The horses love the teff hay. It generally has a sweet flavor for them. And it's particularly good for horses as opposed to alfalfa because it's low in the carbohydrates that will cause horses to have health issues.
Professor Cushman says teff's versatility adds value for Nevada farmers.
Teff not only provides a high-quality forage for livestock production, but it gives us this very highly nutritious, mineral-rich, and gluten-free grain as an added benefit and for human consumption.
Watching the market for teff expand from the East African diaspora to health-conscious consumers, Tesfa Dirar says the high-fiber superfood has global appeal.
Teff could be used for making cookie, for making pancake, porridge. Even the teff itself, the seed, you can boil it and make it hot breakfast cereal. And you can make it for pizza. Now we are working with Pizza Hut to provide them gluten-free teff, so we can make it for pizza.
With great demand for the grain, Dirar is expanding teff cultivation in the states of Kansas, Minnesota, and Texas. For Tewelde Tesfa Gabir in Winnemucca, Nevada, Vincent McCorry, VOA News.
Finally on VOA Asia, up to 40% of food in the U.S. is discarded. But as VOA's Julie Tabo reports, a company in the Netherlands has come up with technology that can help reduce food waste in industrial kitchens.
As much as 40% of food produced in the U.S. goes uneaten, according to the Natural Resources Defense Council. Most of it ends up in landfills, where it releases massive amounts of methane. To help address this global problem, a Dutch company has developed a food waste monitoring system that uses artificial intelligence to help restaurant chefs identify and measure the amount of food being discarded in their kitchens. Olive van der Veen is one of three partners at Orbisk.
We outfit the waste bin with a weighing scale underneath and a camera unit on top. And every time something is disposed of, we take a picture. And our AI image recognition algorithms recognize the type of food that's been thrown away.
The data is instantly collected and shared on a dashboard to help chefs see any recurring issues.
Say you waste 10 kilos of tomatoes every Tuesday morning. That's what we'll tell you. Say your salad buffet doesn't work very well on Fridays because people are more craving for comfort foods, and thus you throw away a lot of this.
That's the kind of insights chefs can now access to drive down their waste, improve their sustainability and profitability.
Croissant? There's not a chef in the world that likes to cook for the waste bin.
Vani Estes is Vice President of Innovation for the International Fresh Produce Association. She spoke with VOA via Skype.
So what their technology is able to do from a restauranter's point of view is really allow them, through artificial intelligence, to predict and to make the right amount of food.
Restaurants don't buy the machine, but pay a monthly subscription fee for the information the machine collects and shares. Since it launched in 2019, the service has helped about 100 restaurants in Europe save food waste and money, the company says. The company plans to expand to markets in the U.S. and hopes one day to eliminate food waste altogether from industrial kitchens. Julie Tabo, VOA News.
That's all for VOA Asia. Find us on Facebook, VOA Asia, on Twitter at VOA Asia, and on Instagram, YouTube, and at voanews.com. Thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao, and team of Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, and Jessica Snow. I'm Chris Cascale in Washington. Bye now.